Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. In this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Mairead Brennan, Senior Clinical Psychologist, Cancer Care West. Here we talk about the psychology of what's happening for parents, the physical and emotional effects, both during and after treatment. Dr. Mairead offers some practical tips to help you navigate this time and the impact on your emotional and physical relationship by validating different stages and giving you tips that might be helpful. Mairead, thank you for joining me on Gold Ribbon Conversations. This is a very different episode, but one that I think is so important and valuable to have, and one that you are having quite regularly as part of the parent workshops for Childhood Cancer Ireland. Thank you for that work that you're doing. Tell me, what is it like when you're standing there with the parents in these workshops? What is the general feeling of those people coming together in this shared experience?
Hi, Sinead. It's great to be here too. Those days are lovely. They're really, I think they're important, and they're important for me as well as for parents to be able to hear their stories, because they're the experts at the end of the day. And when you say, what's it like to be up there in front of everybody and, you know, sharing maybe some of my experience as a clinician and some of the evidence that's out there and some strategies that may help them. I feel a little bit kind of overwhelmed that they're the experts in the room, and I don't want to come across as someone who is providing all the knowing and, you know, at being the expert, because they are. But I suppose a lot of times we hear that parents are coming with a little bit of apprehension around what the day will entail. And we have noticed that it has been, and this is what we've tried to create, the team that's there on the day, of trying to create that space for them to connect with each other and just share their own experiences. So we journey through the different stages of a diagnosis and recovery. And then we look at maybe the impact on the family unit and on the individual, the parent themselves. So I suppose over that day, they get to share that and they get to relate to each other and normalize. Like even in the last workshop we had recently, it was like, and this is normal. This is normal to feel like this. Even though I'm so happy that, you know, where we are as a family and the health of everyone as a family right now, it is normal to feel overwhelmed at times, or feeling fatigued, or feeling stressed, or, you know, all the different difficult feelings that don't end when someone gets to the end of treatment and starts recovery. It's something that it takes a long while. As I explained to parents, it is almost like their battery has been running on empty for such a long period of time that they haven't had a chance to take a breath. And so we don't naturally build up that or recharge that battery in a day or two or a week or more. It takes a long while because you're still living with a lot of the stressors and you're trying to recharge. And I suppose at the start of the day, we also talk about we're going to have space in the afternoon for self-care. And I'm always very aware of not putting another to-do on the parents. Mm-hmm. So it is that, you know, reassuring them that it's around those little things that we can do, giving them some, you know, information and knowledge around our stress systems and how they work and how it doesn't turn back off. And our, you know, we come down into that relaxed parasympathetic nervous system response when a child is in recovery. That continues on. We have to actually learn to retrain our bodies to go back down into that state. So we look at the evidence that suggests that it's really important that we do that. And then we look at the small little micro things that we can do that may help us move towards that self-care recharging. Because I think sometimes self-care can be really feel almost, as someone said to me one time, it was candles and fluffy blankets. And it's not that at all. It's about giving ourselves a little bit of space. Maybe it's, you know, are we aware of hydration? Are we drinking, you know, enough water? Are we taking time to stop as a parent to have breakfast, have lunch, have a moment to ourselves? So I hope, and I try and tell people at the start of the day, I'm hoping that by exploring it together and looking at the strategies that work for you by the end of the day, that you get a sense that it's actually, I'm asking less of you for you to do less rather than another to do to put on your list of now I have the self-care as well. So
do you think it's a barrier for because of busyness, or do you think it's a barrier because it has been so long since I've given myself the permission to care for anything outside of the survival needs of my child or children? You know, and we see that with families that still have, you know, very healthy children, that there can still be that disconnect from self, you know, certainly when you're becoming a parent, you know, that transition. But when you are dealing with a cancer diagnosis and such a survival state, is it that we have spent so long disconnected from the permission of being able to give time, give care, give selfishness in a sense? And I know that, and I'm using selfishness not in a negative way.
That word gets a bad rap.
Yeah.
But it's really, really important to care for self as well, because, you know, there's this metaphor around putting on your own oxygen mask in a plane first before anyone else, because, and I explained to the parents that it's almost like they're the foundation of their house. So if the foundation isn't steady, the rest of the house isn't steady. So it's really important. It's not a, you know, a luxury. It's a necessity that we self-care and look after ourselves so we can better look after the rest of the family and to sustain ourselves over time. You can only hold your breath for a certain amount of time. And, you know, I think it is a bit of both, that the busyness, because it's so many plates are spinning. During a diagnosis and after a diagnosis, you know, it's then that, you know, review appointments as well, the side effects of treatment, stay with you, as a family. And it's then that you know, there's maybe trying to, increase workload as well. So going back into, you know, for financial reasons, going back into work as well. So all the demands are still there. And sometimes what we find is that, external supports maybe step back a little bit at the end of diagnosis because they feel that family, they've seen the family through the treatment and they feel everything is back to normal now because they can maybe see some of those kind of subtle or invisible signs that it's not back to normal, that only really when you experience it as a family that you can recognize. So I think sometimes we find that external supports or, you know, extended family supports would step back a little bit. So I think it's really important that we educate people as well that we need them to maintain the level of support that we have, that recovery only begins at the end of treatment rather than, you know, it's not another diagnosis of, you know, getting your appendix out or broken leg where once, you know, treatment's over, you're back to normal. It's all systems go again. It's a completely different experience that takes months and years to recover from as a family.
Many parents that have been on this podcast have expressed how often when they are in treatment and they are in that that system of treatment and care and being kind of held by whatever next appointment is coming, they are very much fueled with fight, and they are very much, as you said, like being that pillar of strength for the family. And it is when often that the child might be in recovery, the best news has been delivered. The news that everybody has fought for is now here, that actually the crumble begins. And it's unexpected because it's been what you've desired. And yet you, the person, that pillar of strength, the parent, it is then that actually you can feel the emotion become more powerful and overwhelm your system. Can you explain from your expertise, like what's happening there? What is that a normal response? And how can we understand what's happening?
I think, you know, I always use a metaphor of it's almost like a tornado coming through your house. And it's only, you kick into survival mode. So your systems, your stress response is heightened, and that gets you to cope with the tornado. And it's only afterwards, in the aftermath, that you have a chance to even to look around and see what maybe has been damaged or changed as a consequence of. And I think that's very much can be what parents experience as well, what a family experience is. You are going through, as you said, being held by the system, by the medical system, by being held by family. And it's only afterwards that you actually have time to think about it or feel about it. It hasn't been something maybe you had time to do. And your stress system is on that heightened response. It's almost like your battery is on full and you never have time to come down to recharge. And we're creatures of habit. So our system can almost get stuck in that sympathetic nervous system response, where all the adrenaline is flowing, our body is revved up, and we're getting through. And so it actually does take a retraining to bring ourselves back down, because as an animal, you know, that is a survival instinct, that if we are under threat, if we're in danger, our system goes into that sympathetic nervous system response so that we can fight or flight, keep ourselves safe. So afterwards, we are really thinking about it and feeling about it. And that are those are the things that keep that stress system turned on. And we never come back down into that parasympathetic nervous system response where we feel safe. So we almost need to relearn, but also have that vigilance around symptoms of recurrence or your child's not well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's that conflict. And absolutely, there is that dichotomy of feeling. And I hear it quite often. I'm so excited. Everybody's telling me you should be so excited. You must be so excited now. It's all behind you. Isn't it great? And yes, on one hand, but also it's then that you're having that experience of what has happened for us and seeing maybe all the changes that have happened. So it's both. You're holding both at the time. You can be happy, but there's and delighted, but also you're noticing maybe that there's strains within the family unit. Maybe there's strains within your partnership. Maybe there is that exhaustion, symptoms of anxiety and depression that may be present for you. So there's lots of things. And also then, of course, the fear of recurrence. Mm-hmm. That's there at all times for the families.
Because to stay in that nervous system of calm, you must re-enter, like you must trust safety again. Mm-hmm. You must learn to trust the tornado is over and we are safe. And that is very challenging to do when it comes to your children's health, because you have seen the worst. You've received that worst news. And no doubt there is lingering fear. That news could come again.
Most certainly. And also, you know, as a parent, you're feeling the role of you know, keeping your family safe and keeping your children safe. So you're naturally going to keep that hypervigilance then, because you're afraid, I can't miss something. I need to be on all the time. That system needs to be hypervigilant so I can be aware of things if they were to occur. So, you know, it's going against anything that will help you to say, I need to take a breath. I need to actually reset my system and really learn that I can have moments of safety. And the whole idea, if we can retrain ourselves to have those moments of safety where our relaxed system is turned on, our parasympathetic nervous system is turned on, our battery will charge. And so it will help us if stress comes into our life again. So it'll help us sustain us if something difficult is to occur.
Is it something that you train yourself to do? So the moments of safety, that moment of safety could be 10 seconds today, but it could be 30 seconds next week, and it could be 5 minutes in a month's time. And you expand it like that. It's not a case that you get the phone call that says that the cancer diagnosis is now clear, and all of a sudden you're back in, you're back in that nervous system mode. Yeah. Do we have false expectations around what it means to channel ourselves back into that state?
100%, because our body is now programmed. We're creatures of habit, so our body is programmed to stay in that state. It's doing it automatically. We're not even aware of it. So we have to create awareness of when our system is in that heightened state and create those moments where we calm down. But there's so many ways that we create those moments. It is around, you know, looking after our whole self, different aspects of ourself, our physical self, our psychological self, our self. So looking after our own identity, our self as a partner, all those things that are of value to us, our spiritual self. So there's so many different aspects. So part of taking care of our physical self may be, am I sure that I'm getting enough sleep? Am I giving myself that time? Am I hydrating? Am I taking water? Am I eating? Am I taking fresh air? You know, it's not about putting another to-do on if now you have to go out and, even though you're exhausted, and go out and do, you know, a kilometer or whatever it might be of strenuous exercise. It is about, can I take that moment to take a breath? Just be out in fresh air for a few moments. So, and it can be as simple as, can we make sure we have time for a shower? When we're having that shower, do we actually become mindful? And I think mindful is another word that is sometimes difficult to understand, because we feel that we need to have that real serenity and we need to have that really quiet and calm mind. Our mind is supposed to be empty and our body is supposed to be calm. And I, you know, really it is about taking those 30 second moments or even 10 seconds where we're really connecting with all our senses. Because if we come down into our body and create with our sense of smell, our sense of touch, our sense of taste, our hearing, our vision, if we connect, it means that we're down in our body. So you can have that shower for even a minute and connect with, I'm feeling the water on me, I'm feeling the temperature, I'm listening, I'm looking. You know, you're just connecting with it, or even having mindfully have a cup of tea where you're sitting and going, I'm turning off the phone for a minute and I am going to really experience this cup of tea. I'm going to, you know, because often we can drink something or eat something and we haven't tasted it. We haven't been even aware. We're in our mind. We're so busy with our thoughts, because I suppose one thing that happens when our stress response is turned on is that our mind is racing. We're being that extra hypervigilant self that's looking out for danger in my environment. So our mind is going to naturally be that way. And so we need to be able to maybe bring our attention to one particular thing, like drinking that cup of tea and being present for the tea. So we're giving our body and brain a moment to quieten and to focus. So even those 30 seconds or a minute can be those moments where I'm feeling safe. So we're giving messages to our body. We can come back down into that rest stage, even for a few moments, and it'll be okay.
Do you think that it is something that we resist? Because we're trained, as you said, we're trained, mm-hmm. you know, like we're in a state of, that's the way our body is working right now. That's the program we're running on. But do we resist it as well? Because maybe sitting down for those 30 seconds with that cup of tea allows feelings to come up that we don't want to feel.
Sure. I think they're going to be there anyway, but we don't maybe have give the space to them. But it's costing us anyway, because if we're using the defense mechanisms of always being busy to avoid those, that has its own cost. And I suppose if you are sitting for a few moments and being mindful and being present to what you're doing, you're focusing on your attention on that. And you can then make choices whether you connect with those feelings or spend some time in those feelings or not. Mm. But I think it's important for us to be give space to those feelings, because it is processing over time of giving ourselves that time to be able to process the grief of having this illness come into our family and all that we've experienced as a consequence of the illness. Because we often think that, you know, we'll be safe. And this has taken our family's safety. So it is a grieving process as well, and a process of learning to readjust to what parents can consider, you know, the new norm. Because it's a new way of being in the world, I think. I mean, a lot of people are saying they've heard, you're back to normal now. I'm a different person. And there might be some positive aspects of that different part of myself. I might be more aware of, you know, my resilience, the capacities I have. It may have brought us together, you know, stronger as a family unit. And sometimes, of course, then there's the consequence of it has a impact on our family unit as well, especially our partnership. Because I think it's, you know, with all those plates spinning, you may not feel you have time or even capacity to connect with you as a partner, with you and your partner.
And let's explore that, because I think if you have lost yourself, it is very hard to connect as yourself with somebody else who potentially has lost themselves. So you now have two people who don't even know who they are. This process is changing them cellularly, trying to still be the people that they were when they first began this relationship. But they are now just so far apart. And while you're a team in the fight, the dynamic of that relationship is not the same.
Absolutely. It can be very different. And I suppose a lot of times if there's additional stressors then in the, you know, in the family, whether it be financial stressors or different stressors like moving home during a diagnosis, it can have even a bigger impact on the relationship. But I suppose it is around taking that time, if possible, in the recovery period of making that reconnection, of having that communication where you're looking at where are we now? How are we doing? What's important to us as a partnership? Of giving, again, that time together, even if it's just moments. I think even, you know, as you say, you're going through the same experience, but it can feel so different. And there is a lot of gender differences in the experience of a diagnosis. A lot of stressful issues that are the same, such as financial issues or, you know, helping a child and helping siblings. Lots of those stresses are the same for both partners. But there is also gender differences between partners in that often it's women that feel that communication with partners has been most impacted. And men in particular have found that even though both have found these stressors, men have found them even more so of being away from work and lack of intimacy in their partnership as being so important to them and feel something that has been impacted. So I suppose it is important to know those and to be able to talk together around those different issues and what it's like for you as a partnership.
Mairead is a vital part of our Childhood Cancer Ireland parent workshops throughout the year, alongside play therapist and child and adolescent psychotherapist Debbie Cullinane. Childhood Cancer Ireland knows that it's often only when treatment is over that parents have a chance to breathe and start to deal with what they've been through. You may leave the experience feeling stuck, in high alert mode, and disconnected from your old life and relationships. Our parent workshops will offer some practical strategies to help you find you again. Our day-long workshops are happening around Ireland again in 2024. To find out more and to read feedback from parents who attended in 23, visit childhoodcancer.ie. or find the link in our show notes.
And to help us to continue our services, please text GOLD to 50300 and donate €4, or visit childhoodcancer.ie for more.
Do you think it's very much related back to our core expectations of ourselves? So for you say there that the being away from work piece for men creates more of a stress. Do you think that's linked back to a feeling of, well, that's my role in this? I'm still programmed to feel like, while there is, of course, gender balance, but somehow work and sense of self is connected in that role of like, I'm providing, I'm being that protector.
Yeah, I think there is that kind of, you know, traditional roles that come up. But I suppose we don't also want to make it gender specific. It can be very individual. And even in our coping styles can be very individual. You know, and I think it's really important for us to be able to talk through those, because sometimes we can, you know, even in a partnership or in any relationship, we can make assumptions because we know that person so well. We're making assumptions of what they're thinking or why they're behaving a particular way. And, you know, this is a whole new experience for a family and we couldn't possibly know. So it's very important for that communication piece, because I often hear, you know, maybe someone say, my husband is just, you know, he's going fixing things, or he's busy around the house and he's busy at work and that's his focus. And, you know, I feel more alone in the, you know, in this journey, and that I feel that more the burden is put on me to care for the family. And, you know, there may be resentment or frustration or feeling lack of knowing your partner in that, when really it might be their coping style, that they might be doing their best and this is the way that they feel that they're contributing, rather than, you know, maybe the mom feeling that it is, they're just not caring or they're not being involved. So really, you know, we can be very open to misunderstanding or making assumptions. And we really, especially when our stress response is heightened, we're even more likely, because we are only able to do a certain amount of thinking. And so we're more likely to make snap decisions or snap judgments or look at making those assumptions. So it's really important at those times in particular to be able to communicate clearly how we're feeling, how it feels, what the experience is like for us. Because in that maybe communication and knowing that that's where your husband or partner feels that they are contributing most, and you letting them know that that's what's not most helpful, or you're feeling alone in the other parts, then it may change the dynamic completely.
So what if the stress response, what if part of that stress response is that communication isn't coming easy for you, that actually a symptom of your stress is that you shut down. You can't find the words. You don't want to engage. You're keeping yourself so safe inside your own head. And one partner, their coping mechanism is, I need to talk this out. I need to express all these feelings. I need to feel heard. And both parties, while, you know, wanting to do the best for each other, actually their styles of coping right now are not compatible.
And I suppose, again, they can communicate that clearly. But as you say, there's times where they can't communicate what their needs are, and they're in that frozen position and don't have the energy or capacity to do that. I suppose sometimes it is around having patience with each other at that time, of understanding that there is those differences, and maybe at this position point in time you can't relate to each other. And instead of, I think the important part is that we don't, you know, try, as you say, if a partnership, if one is moving towards where I need to talk and the other feels I can't talk, that we don't put too much pressure on the person, that we're respecting both positions, that right now one partner is not able to talk and the other partner is, that we're both giving space and time to respecting that, to respecting the differences is important, so that we're not trying to move forward, but it's not, you know, going to be even more damaging. But giving time and space to recognize that the difference and to give time to it. And maybe, I suppose, also just to name as well that we do have around the country now different supports that are in place for families. There's support centres in most parts of the country, and that do feel that as a family, you can link in for that support, you know, both as for individual support. Sometimes we support one partner in helping them to understand that they're having a different style right now, and that giving time to self-care will, and giving patience, may help to also then over time being able to share your experience or help your partner to understand your experience. But I suppose it is always important when we're communicating that we don't do that from a place of frustration, which is not always easy. You know, when we're feeling stressed and under pressure, we want to maybe move towards someone and get it resolved. And we want them to understand. So we're talking at them in a way. We're trying to get them to understand our perspective. But if their system is heightened as well, they're not in a position to hear us. So for us to be able to hear each other, we need to have that rested system on. So maybe it's about not taking moments when you're both stressed or when there's lots of different things happening in the family, the kids are getting ready or you're doing lots of different things. It's about having those moments together where maybe you're both in that rested position. Maybe it's, you know, having a moment when the kids are gone to bed on the couch, you know, just that you're talking, making time to maybe go out for a walk together, just the two of you with the phones off, just creating little micro moments. Because maybe, you know, you don't want maybe to have those moments where you have an expectation there's going to be a big conversation and things are going to be resolved. But that you are saying to each other, I'm here. Things are tough at the moment, but I want to keep working on this. Mm. And that can be just sitting together on the couch. But I suppose we also, the communication bit is around maybe your sexual intimacy. Maybe we haven't. That has been something that has not had any space in quite a bit of time. And it is something that comes up in research a lot, and I hear it here in my practice a lot, that a lot of families or partners feel that that sexual intimacy, they don't have the time, as they say, even the research, that has gone out the window, that there is no time for that. And that is coming back again to our stress system being heightened. Because one thing is when our battery is running on empty and we're in that chronic stress position, our libido is often affected. Mm-hmm. And when we don't have the energy, when we're, you know, we're not feeling sexual ourselves, when we're not connected with our body ourselves, we don't feel we have any desire to have that intimacy. So it is really important that if we are feeling that is something that has been impacted, and we both feel that's something that we want to work towards improving and reconnecting, that we have that communication around that, and give yourselves permission that we can reconnect with that part of our identity if it's so important to us. That by simply saying, I miss this, we used to have more intimate moments. I miss this. And it's also, I think, important to name that there's not that, you know, sometimes you think, well, if it's something that we've talked about, we missed, then if we sit on the couch together at night and we hug, or that one partner might think, oh, my Lord, I certainly don't want to for anything to happen right now. But so what we want to do is make sure that when we have those conversations, that we are clear about the expectations, that we take those moments to connect. Maybe it's just by starting by sitting on the couch together and holding hands or hugging, or just having those moments, or the eye contact. And that we say, tonight, that's it. That's the level of intimacy we're having. Because even more so than, you know, I think there's so many different levels of intimacy, but I think the most thing that's missed by a partner is that intimacy in itself, of connection as a partnership, not necessarily only sexual intimacy. So having that space together that may feel that you don't have that time to give at the moment or haven't had for a while. So building that back up, almost getting to know each other, getting to know that part of each other again.
And I can feel, even as you're talking, how necessary it is to feel safe to allow that.
100%. So it's about, that's why I say it might be something that you communicate now. I miss this part of us. And then it's over time, as well as your self-care, that you're allowing your system to come back down. So you're in that position of safety. Yeah. But the safety is created by that self-care, but also about that clear communication. So there's no, you know, unknown expectations. Every, you know, you're both working off the same template. This is what we're going to have tonight. This is us reconnecting tonight. This is so building up towards it over time. But it's almost like there is a, you know, a type of approach in psychology that is it's called acceptance and commitment therapy. And it is around, it's called ACT. And it is around how we look at our values, what's important to us, and how we can move towards it. So by knowing what is important to us right now, and what maybe we need to, you know, has been impacted and you want to recover, it's almost like then once you've identified that value, that we turn ourselves towards it, that we have almost like a compass in our hand that's turning us towards that value. And as a couple thinking, what are the little steps that we can make back towards that value? So taking the pressure off that you want that value right now, it's around going, that's it there. We're moving towards it. So again, it's that intimacy of doing it as a partnership. If we both miss it, we both want to move towards it. How do we do that? How do we create those moments for ourselves?
While also giving yourself the grace that you have to meet yourself and your own values and your own new version of you who has come through this tornado and who is now on the other side. And who isn't the same, and who also needs to be put back together before they can join that union in a way. You know, you need to accept that I need to find out who I am in order to give my new self to this partnership.
Absolutely. And that's the part around patience of, you know, giving yourself and each other the patience. That it may take time to build towards that, that you're both forming your new identity, of having that space to think about what's important to me now, what do I need to reconnect with various aspects of self, not just partnership, not just intimacy, of, you know, connecting and reestablishing those parts of your identity that you want to reestablish, that maybe, you know, that are so important to you that you want to bring back online, and then the other aspects that maybe have changed as a consequence, new things that you want to connect with, or things you want to improve on.
What would you say to those that are at the beginning of this journey? So it's not those that are looking to reconnect after treatment is finished, but are at the beginning of this and are wanting to protect in a way, in whatever way they can, that union and that relationship, so that it continues to be a scaffolding for each other as they navigate this. What are the things that maybe you can expect of yourselves or accept of yourselves? You know, what can they, or should they, try to do, if possible, to stay partnered in this fight?
I think, again, it comes back to communication of, if you can even start by saying, we are fragmented now, our things have changed for us, but we both want to move forward and to recover as in our partnership. So that you both have the same aim that you're working towards. But then it's about saying, we're going to give ourselves time and patience and understanding that we may be in totally different places, but we both have the same aim long term. And then it is around creating the self-care and both for both partners, so that you're giving space to heal yourself. and giving yourself space to bring that safety system back online. And over time, creating those micro moments, if you can, of connection. That you're even checking in with each other, going, are we both moving towards the same aim still? And if you need external support, because sometimes if we're very fragmented, we can't hear each other. So it is maybe having that external support, either individually or together, to maybe finding that safe and contained space that you can learn to hear each other again.
You spoke about when people come to these workshops that you so gratefully host for Childhood Cancer Ireland, that there's some trepidation and a little bit of unknown when they come to the workshop. By the end of the day, what do you feel from the group?
I feel that they feel less alone, and that's something that we've heard. I think a lot of the trepidation coming into the day is that's going to bring up things for them, that they're going to become very emotional, and it's almost taking a step backwards for them. I think by the end of the day, they see that we've had maybe tears, moments of tears, which are allowed and respected. And we've had moments of laughter, and that they feel more connected, that they have more of a connection with others in the room, that they can relate to each other. Things are normalized for them, that they feel that they can understand where they are themselves now, what things that they can feel that we validated for them of their resilience and their strategies that have worked really well for them. And also for them to be able to connect with the things that they feel that they have put aside, strategies they haven't had time or capacity to use, but that they can bring them back online now, and also equipping them with maybe new coping strategies that they can use themselves moving forward. So we always ask them at the end of the day to give a lesson jar. So it's a lesson as in what one thing that you learned today, and a lesson in that, something that they can leave here today. And people often, like, we don't look at those pieces of paper, but from hearing and talking to people, they're saying that, you know, it has lessened their load, that they felt it's normalized how they're feeling, and that they're less alone now, and that they feel empowered themselves to make those little changes for themselves that will help them to move forward, that they are taking those moments to recharge their battery, and that it's something that is important for them, for their partnership, for their whole family, to move forward and to create that new norm for themselves.
It is a long and slow process, but it can be guided by people like you, who are doing this wonderful work, which is so appreciated. It's not something that we should stay alone in our heads with. Staying in that survival state, as you said, it comes at a cost. And while it might feel safe because it's normal, it doesn't mean it's how we should be existing. Especially after coming through a fight where we've learned how we get to live and live well and to enjoy life again. But I'm so grateful to know that there are experts out there sharing this information to normalize what people are experiencing, to help them understand the very natural, you know, stress responses and systems that their bodies are now running on. And to guide them safely and gently and supportively towards reconnecting with themselves and their partners. It's such a fight, and it is such a tornado. I think it's a really good analogy, because you can imagine after it comes through the home, you're so grateful and you're holding each other tightly, but you look around and there is such destruction there. And you have to go brick by brick.
I think that is such a wonderful analogy for anybody who's expecting to feel very differently, very quickly. But if you do go brick by brick and you do bring in the right plumbers and builders and electricians to help you, and that's it, it's, you're not supposed to do it alone, to help you, you can in fact build not the same thing that was there before, but build something that is right for who you are now. And that is thanks to your work. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.